I literally had three jobs when I went to work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas. I was in the life insurance business, and I was in the employee benefit business, and that's what people knew that I did. I also stocked shelves for a company called Nabisco, and I also, in my early 20s, my third job with two kids, I had a paper route. So I remember the day that I interviewed for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas, and I went to interview for that job. Guess what? I had to throw those papers before I went to that interview. When my son was born, my second child, I had to throw those newspapers before I took my wife to the hospital. And then I had to get up and do it again the next morning.
Street Smart Podcast, still on the road here in Midland with one of my absolute favorite people in the world, Dal Watson. Not short for anything. We just cleared that up. I've known him for 30 years, and I just asked that question today. but Dal is someone I met. I was 18. I just graduated high school.
Yeah.
And somebody talked me into officiating high school football.
Yep.
And you had already been doing it for a while. And man, you and a handful of other guys that just kind of took pity on me or whatever you want to say, but right. You kind of took me under your wing, and you become one of my favorite people. I tell people that when someone says Dal Watson, it just makes me smile.
Well, and I appreciate that.
Our paths have kind of crossed back and forth, you know, yeah. Most recently in an odd way over at the state baseball championships a couple of years ago, and yeah. I was screaming your name, and you ignored me, and that's cool.
that's what I'm supposed to do.
You were there to,
do. To
umpire the game, that's right. I knew what you were doing.
I was like, I don't know anybody from these two teams, but there you were.
But there's someone yelling Dal, and there I was. I'm everywhere, man. I'm like bad news. Yeah. But I'm really excited, like I was telling you earlier. You and I have known each other for so long,
yeah.
And I kind of know your story, but I don't know your story. And so it's going to be interesting to kind of hear, you know, how we got to where we are today.
Sure.
And I'm excited to hear it, and I don't care if anybody else listens to it. It's
something. Maybe my kids will listen to it. I've got three kids.
You know, whenever I interview people, you always know at least you're getting your immediate family, if for yeah. no other reason than to pick on you about it.
Right, for sure.
And I'm down with that. but yeah, we'll, and I'll make my wife listen to part of it. Enough of it that it registers a listen.
Right, there
so,
you go.
So there you go. But let's start, you know, in the beginning. I mean, were you born here in Midland and raised here and all of that? Or
actually, born and raised in Odessa. So
gotta go.
Yeah. No, like so many families in West Texas, the energy industry brought my family here. My mom's side of the families was from Johnson County, so around the Cleburne area. Mm-hmm. My maternal granddad grew up in a little town called Godly, Texas, which is just right outside of Cleburne, but in the same Johnson County.
So kind of south of the DFW area.
Yeah, south of Fort Worth there. And he moved out here and basically did anything and everything you can do on a drilling rig. A lot of his photos and things that remind me of him. He was like a second father to me. He was a great man. And from what I understand, he was a really good athlete. As the story goes, and I've not been able to confirm, you know, any of this, that, you know, way back in the day, he was born in the late 1910s, right? And he was a pretty good athlete and possibly had an opportunity to play professional baseball, but obviously back then, coming out of the Depression, things like that, professional baseball is not like what we witnessed last night between the Astros and the Rangers in Game 7.
Thanks for bringing it up. It was a remarkable game. And good for the Rangers, man. They've been back in a long time. And you know, maybe this time when they're one strike away from winning it, they won't blow it.
Yeah, well, you know, it was a great series. I mean, I think I mentioned to you, I ran into a guy, we were watching the game, and I said, how ironic is it that the visiting team has won every single one of these games? And he stopped. It kind of stopped him in his tracks. And he was like, wow, you're right. And
I'm like, when you told me that, I'm like, who doesn't notice that?
Yeah,
you know,
for
like
sure.
Good grief is blatantly obvious. But
yeah, for sure. But so the energy industry brought my granddad out here.
And that's your mom's dad.
That's my mom's dad. Raymond Bowling was his name. Great man. He retired later on in life. And he and my grandmother, they never missed a game. of myself or my two younger brothers. They were always there. They always had a supply of Super Bubble gum. It didn't matter if it was the regular flavor, the apple flavor, the grape flavor.
Sure. All of them lose their flavor about at the same rate. Exactly. So it doesn't matter what flavor.
So a lot of times I felt like my grandmother was kind of like the team grandmother, and they just loved coming to watch us play our whatever sport we were in. And that sort of thing. And so we actually we ate at their home probably about 50 Sundays out of the year. We would
if my math's right, that's only about 2 weeks you're missing.
And we would go to church, and then we would either go home with them after what we call big church or Sunday school, and that was all dependent upon whether or not the Dallas Cowboys played at high noon. So it was a guaranteed we were going to go home after Sunday school and miss big church, if you will.
I tell you what, man, around here, if the Cowboys are on at noon, that big service get a little scarce.
Yeah, for sure. But obviously that was back in the day, Texas Stadium, where obviously they cut a hole in the roof so that God could watch as well. That's you right. know, and that sort of thing, of course.
I was actually somewhat depressed when they blew that thing up.
I know.
I got to call a high school game in there, and I was like – and. It gets remarkably cold in that stadium.
It does.
It was unbelievably. I was like, how does it get this cold? But it doesn't let any. It lets all of the hot air out.
Right.
And just keeps all of the cold air in.
For sure. And then obviously Tom Landry was the coach.
Sure.
Love that man for all that he stood for, and he's one of the icons of.
My dad
NFL
still
coaches.
Doesn't recognize any other coach.
Right.
It's the guy.
For sure. For sure. But so that was kind of the, you know, what brought my mom's side of the family out here. My dad's side of the family was from in and around Young County. It's amazing I know all these counties. But he grew up in right outside of Graham, Texas, somewhere between Graham and Possum Kingdom. And then my grandmother also my grandma grew up in that same area. So they had some family that came out here. Had some family that was some lease operators, some of the gentlemen. And so they came out here, you know, worked all their many years. He worked for BP Amoco, was able to accumulate a pretty nice retirement, and they moved back to that area. So like so many families, the oil and gas industry draws them here. I can remember when my kids were growing up and they didn't necessarily understand the ways of this area. You know, they're like, well, why do some people are in the oil and gas and other people aren't? I said, look, whether you are a teacher, a policeman, a fireman, you know, a mayor, whatever, or you're in the oil and gas business, everybody out here is somehow, some way in the oil business, either directly or indirectly.
They're absolutely affected by it.
Oh, absolutely.
Up or down.
Absolutely. And so we've seen those highs and lows over the years. And it's kind of funny. I'm of the age now, I'm 57. You know, when the guy says the oil prices will never go below X, Y, or Z, you better buckle up because it's gonna get.
I mean, I lived out here until I was 33, and I remember watching my dad have to auction a business off.
Yeah.
And you know, and that those are things. I was 8 or 9 years old when that happened, and those are things you're like, you remember that.
Oh, for sure.
And you're like, okay, well, I never want to be in business for myself at all. But it's interesting, and that's one of the real drivers for this podcast, is just that I've been around so many entrepreneurs in my life, and West Texas, Midland in particular, is almost a hub for it. I mean, there's so many creative people out here, centered generally around the oil and gas industry. That terrifies me, that concept. And so I was always curious about people that were willing to, you know, bet on themselves in that way. And
for sure.
So, and you're no different than that. And your story is going to be unique. But what did you want to be when you were growing up?
Yeah, I think like a lot of people, I was growing up, obviously in the late 1960s, early 1970s, I wanted to be Roger Staubach. I mean, you know.
That was already taken.
But I can remember getting a photograph made, myself and my two younger brothers. We loved football. We loved all sports, but, I mean, loved football. And we loved Roger Staubach. And I mean, that guy could do no wrong. I mean, the guy's the one that created the term. I think he borrowed the term, the Hail Mary.
Yeah, I mean, legend. I mean, he's icon
for sure. And then, no respect if Danny White's listening to this, you know, later in life. And then you have Danny White that's got to come in, and he's got to play second fiddle to what Roger Staubach did.
Danny White was a legitimately good quarterback, but he was not Roger Staubach.
No, he wasn't.
And when you're on the Cowboys team, you have to be Roger Staubach.
You do.
Or whoever.
Yeah. And then that late, come from behind, Hail Mary, come out of nowhere. And, fast forward to, the early 2020s, we kind of have that in a guy named Patrick Mahomes, who happened to go to Texas Tech. So,
which is near and dear to both of our hearts.
Yeah, for sure.
And Patrick Mahomes is our one. Like, he replaced Zach Thomas.
Yeah.
As our greatest player to ever come out of Tech.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think name another player that this early in their career you're like, well, he's a Hall of Famer immediately. Like,
yeah.
He's already could quit tomorrow and right. be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Unreal.
Oh, absolutely.
And I remember watching him at Tech and thinking, I mean, he's good.
Yeah.
But I think his greatness was, and I say this as a lifetime Tech fan, and you played there, so you can say it too. I think a lot of Tech's mediocrity kind of hid how great Patrick Mahomes actually is.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Well, and that's, I think, every week when you tune in, you're like, what's he going to do now?
That's right.
Yeah.
I was not a Chiefs fan until he was on there, and I'm like,
me neither. Well,
then I'm mad, like, I live in Houston now, and then I'm mad when they play the Texans game.
Yeah.
And right. I'm like, who cares about them? You know,
right.
But they're actually looking pretty good this year. But
yeah.
So you wanted to be a football player.
Yeah.
And you did a lot of that.
Did, yeah.
Yeah. And so you played at Permian.
Mm-hmm. I did.
Oh, I almost threw up a little bit. But
old Midland Bulldog you.
Yeah. Yeah. I was reminded of that on that field calling a football game one night by Coach Quisenberry of Lee High School.
Right. There you go.
Sorry, Legacy High School.
Legacy. There you go.
I'm sorry about that. There LHS. You go. He said, you went to Midland High. I shouldn't expect anything. And I was like, oh, my God. So you played at Permian. What position did you play?
I played fullback and middle linebacker. So and this was back during
basically the same position on each side of the ball.
Right.
Yeah, one defensive and one offensive.
So we had some success in that program, obviously, in the 1980s and that sort of thing. And
they did a movie about it, didn't they?
Yeah, some movie. I don't know if
book.
People have heard about it. There's a book,
right,
you know, some stuff like that. But – no, it was obviously it was a lot of fun. My coach back then was a guy named John Wilkins. I thought the guy hung the moon.
Sure.
I mean, in all honesty, in my mind, there was, you had Tom Landry. Then you had,
and no one's going to supplant him.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's Tom Landry.
But you had the great coach, at University of Texas at that time, at Alabama, Bear Bryant, that kind of thing. And then there was John Wilkins. And I'll
Number
be honest
three.
With you. I felt like he belonged in that category of coaches. I mean, he was, to me, a master motivator and was just a really, really great coach. He spent so much time on his craft. And the funny thing about it is, and you think about how long John Wilkins has been out of Texas high school football coaching, he still ranks in the top five winningest all-time head football coaches in Texas high school football history. That's now over 100 years.
That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, it speaks for itself because when you tell people you're from Midland, Odessa, they know it for one of two things, Permian Panthers or Jessica McClure.
Yeah.
It's one of those two things.
Yeah.
Now that those are sort of aging out now,
sure.
But in my demographic, it was one of those two things.
Sure.
So that speaks for itself, that legacy. So then you went on to play from Permian. You went on to play at Texas Tech for Spike Dykes, which is another legendary coach.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, other than Leach, I can't think of a better coach that Tech has had.
Yeah.
And just an amazing
Well, and I always felt like Coach Dykes got the maximum amount of talent out of his players. It was amazing to see. He didn't have a lot of, five-star recruits, obviously, and that sort of thing.
You almost have to do that
at
Tech because Lubbock's not – look. Lubbock's not Austin.
Yeah.
No, it's not going to attract.
For sure.
It's starting to attract more talent,
yeah.
But you have to do that. You have
yeah.
to be able to maximize what you got.
Right. And then obviously Coach Leach, and he came along.
Sure.
And he forever changed the landscape of
college football in general.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, pro football is running a lot of air
for
raid
sure.
type
I mean,
stuff.
Look at all the coaches that have gone from the college ranks to mm-hmm. to the pro ranks. And his influence and his quote-unquote disciples that he has helped coach. In fact, even Sonny Dykes, who is one of Coach Dykes' sons there at TCU now. Obviously, last year went to the national championship. Didn't have the greatest game, but obviously, in Georgia,
getting there's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, just it was an incredible run. And Sonny's a few years younger than me, so just the fact to remember him, when I was at Tech, and him being a little bit younger. And
I've always wondered, do former players? I know you go. I see on your Instagram, Facebook, all that you go back to Tech frequently.
Yeah,
I mean, it's 115 miles or whatever.
Right.
I remember when that road was 55 miles an hour. It was a brutal drive, but now it's not bad. Do you maintain relationships with, like, Sonny Dykes and people like that? I mean, those are obviously very busy people, but
sure.
Being someone that played for his dad, I would think that gives you a unique relationship there.
Yeah.
What's that like?
Yeah, not necessarily Sonny, but I think if our paths were to cross today, we would just kind of pick up where we left off.
But he would know you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. And his dad has meant the world to me. Obviously, he's passed away here a number of years ago. But and it doesn't matter, just no matter if it's sports or business or just life, when people believe in you and they pull you up and they see something in you that you don't necessarily see in yourself or you haven't seen in yourself, man, you never forget about those people, ever.
Going back to what I originally opened with, that's what you represented to me when I was 18. Because I wasn't taking that serious. Like, I didn't – until I walked out on a high school field and I was like, hey, man, that guy over there is getting paid. This is his job to coach these kids.
Sure.
And that was a revelation for me. And then I was talking to our friend Delvin Gwynn about it at the barbecue a month ago or so. And he was like – We saw that you could do it.
Yeah.
And, so we brought you along. And, and you're right. In sports, life, business, anything, that is immeasurable. You can't put a figure on what that means. And I just wonder how many times people miss that opportunity because of whatever reason. For some reason, they just don't invest that time in somebody, but I never experienced that with you guys. You guys were awesome.
Well, I mean, I think we saw something in you that there wasn't a lot of new people coming into our hobby officiating.
You mean new to the earth? Because I was pretty young.
Yeah, you were, but there weren't a lot of 18-year-olds, 19, 20-year-olds that were interested in getting into something like that. Sometimes that interest comes on later in life. So when you see that and you think, okay, well, they have the network of other people that, because obviously, like in any hobby, particularly in officiating sports, you're constantly recruiting new people into your organization and trying to keep them on board and hoping that
it is not
people
easy.
Don't get blown out. I mean, it doesn't take much.
Yeah, it's not easy either.
No, it's not.
I explained to people towards the end of my career calling games like Odessa Hypermian. I'm like, you got to understand that the town at that time was 100,000 people.
Yeah.
25,000 of those people would be at that game.
Yeah.
And when you go to see a high school game in Houston, it might be crowded, but they have games Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and you're seeing a 6A game, you'd see 2,500, 5,000 people. We're routinely seeing 15, 20,000 people in the stand. It's intense arena.
Yeah, so just the other day, Permian and Odessa High, squared off at Ratliff Stadium, and there was 18,000 plus people there.
There was a drone. You might have posted that, a drone shot of the stadium.
That
was an amazing picture.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah, off as you were looking back to the west, the sun was setting, and you see...
It's an amazing picture.
Yeah, just you see all these people in the stands, and obviously the game went down to the final play. And was a classic game. And so I think that's obviously the author of the Friday Night Lights book. I mean, I think that's what he saw, is like, wow, this is not normal.
It's real football. I mean, it is, and it's very serious.
Yeah.
So you go to Tech. What did you play at Tech?
Played outside linebacker.
So they move you straight to defense.
Move me straight to defense, yeah.
Is it your temperament?
Well, and I think, too, you just look at – the type of athlete that was playing running back. I was not that guy. You know, I was not. I didn't have 4.5 40 speed or something like that. I mean, on a good day, it was 4.8.
What do you think your speed is now? What do you think your 40 speed is now?
I don't know. I think we time it with a sundial.
Yeah.
So it's bad. In fact, when I'm running up and down the field now, I know there's a certain number of RPMs that if I exceed that, I'm going to blow a tire.
Yeah.
And it comes in the form of a pulled muscle. So.
Oh, man. I remember we could go into some really personal stories that would mean nothing to people on this podcast, but Tim Wright decided he wanted to race in the parking lot in El Paso when I was still in my early 20s.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Tim's never been the most agile. I mean, he's surprisingly agile for his shape, but
right.
he blew his hamstring out to the point it bruised. He fell. It was so funny.
Yeah.
So you go to Tech, because you and I will rabbit hole down talking about old times, man. It's amazing. It's amazing I've known you 30 years, honestly. It's
That's
weird to
scary,
think about. It really is. More for you than me. But anyway, when you're at Tech and you're playing football, at some point did you think, man, I might do this professionally. I could maybe do this.
Yeah, no, I never really allowed my mind to go down that path. Because here's the really incredible thing about this.
Is this your jersey, by the way?
This is my jersey, yeah, right over
here.
Is it
game worn or is it a replica?
It is game worn. That is from 1986. We played in the Independence Bowl against Ole Miss.
Did we win?
Yeah, we didn't win. Damn. We played a good game.
Did you miss a tackle?
I didn't play a lot that year. That was my sophomore year. I made my first. I made my living the first three and a half seasons or two and a half seasons on special teams, but and that sort of thing. But no. Obviously, I had some teammates that went on to play in the NFL, and then I also got to play against some guys that are household names that people would know. We played against a guy named Barry Sanders.
Heard of him.
I've got his autograph sitting over there.
How hard was he to tackle?
Just go out and go out in an open field and try to tackle a deer. It doesn't matter if it's a small deer, an old deer, a fat deer, or a skinny deer. Just go try to tackle
it. Just give it a shot.
And an incredible athlete. And Barry, if you're listening, so we had a kind of a good.
If you're listening, I'm surprised, but that would be awesome.
Yeah. Don't be surprised. He probably listens every week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But anyway, this was kind of a goodwill game that was played in Tokyo, Japan. Okay.
And how cool is that?
Yeah. So we flew over there on the same 747. So we met at DFW.
The teams rode together.
Interesting. And so, like I said, it was a game that was predetermined before the season even started. And so the Oklahoma State Cowboys had the right-hand side of the plane, and the Texas Tech Raiders had the left-hand side of the 747. And oh, by the way, the official band was the Grambling Band. So as you know, in a 747, there's two stories. So the Grambling Band was upstairs in that second level. And so we went over and we practiced for about a week, and we had a game. And it was
it's interesting they assigned a neutral band
to
you guys.
And the official – the cheerleaders
were – the Grambling Band was the shit, dude. I mean, they were awesome.
Well, and the official cheerleaders were the Miami Dolphin cheerleaders. So go figure. We even threw in some professionals there.
What?
I don't know.
Odd thing, man.
But yeah, so that's kind of a keepsake that I have. So the coaches got to sit in first class there in the nose of the plane.
Of course.
Because I was a senior along with Tyrone Thurman, All-American
from
Texas Tech and a great Midland
legacy. I remember seeing him play. I was in first grade. Continue.
Yeah, but no. So since he and I were seniors, we got to sit in business class, and then all the underclassmen got to sit in coach behind
us.
Were
y'all the only two seniors?
No, there was, so all of business class, the left-hand side of the plane.
The other seniors aren't worth mentioning, just Tyrone Thurman?
Well, you know, Tyrone, Billy Joe Tolliver, Boyd Cowan, you know, the list goes
on. A handful of names that you'd recognize.
James Gray, sort of thing. But no, the thing that was so cool, we're in the middle section, so I'm sitting next to the aisle, then it's Tyrone Thurman, and then it's Barry Sanders. And so on the way over and on the way back, I'm sitting two seats from Barry Sanders. And I will say this about the guy. He was one of the most humble people I've ever met in my life. I remember sliding that piece of paper over to him and said, "Hey, Barry, would you give me your autograph?"
Yeah, I mean, it was obvious he was going to be somebody.
Oh, yeah. In fact, while we were in Tokyo, he was awarded the Heisman Trophy. He didn't even get to go. If I remember the story right, he wasn't even in New York to accept the award. He was given the award while he was in Tokyo for that particular game.
What an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I'm not surprised to hear you say that about him. I mean, talk about a guy like he left the game at the height of his athletic ability and career.
Sure. Yeah.
For whatever reason, and offered no explanation that I remember. Just, I'm done.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and he could.
And he could. Yeah. And he had so much respect from everyone that no one really got mad about it.
Right.
And you're like, okay, cool, Barry. Thanks for it.
Well, and you think about if he had
I think it was because he was the Lions.
Yeah. Well, and it might be, you know. Yeah, but, I mean, but it's one of those deals where, I mean, you know, now Emmitt Smith, if I remember correctly, he's still the all-time rushing leader in the NFL. You know, if Barry Sanders is with a little bit better offensive line, that record probably belongs to him and
it
not Emmitt
probably
Smith,
does not, you know, belong to Emmitt Smith.
You know, that sort of thing.
I mean, the things he did with the line he had were unreal.
Yeah.
What an amazing experience all of that is.
Oh, for sure.
Just all of those experiences are just unbelievable.
Yeah. And
you look back on them and think, man, how did I get to do that?
Yeah. And that's the thing that I appreciate so much about it was here's this guy – you know, from Odessa, Texas, and you got this opportunity to go play these games and go to these places and meet these people. We played against Neon Deion, you know. So Deion Sanders was a junior.
Prime.
And
I had someone at my jiu-jitsu gym ask if Amazon Prime gave him the name Coach Prime. And I said,
that's awesome.
I'm not going to answer your question. You need to go do some Googling.
Right.
Because you'll find the answer pretty quick. But that's the dumbest shit I've heard in a long time.
Well, he was a junior that year. And of course, this is the thing. You didn't really know who these guys were because they hadn't reached the height of their fame.
Right.
But he was a junior that year. Obviously had a really good game. Played at Florida State. Obviously, you know, he went on to be one of the greatest athletes to play not only professional
football, but
Major League Baseball. And then what he's done at University of Colorado and all that, you know, they got off to a fast start. I'm a Deion fan because you look at the guy and what he's done. It's really incredible. We also had an opportunity to play against a guy named Vinny Testaverde, who went on to play, you know, for the Dolphins, if I remember right, or I may be off on that, but obviously
he became the new Danny White.
Yeah,
at some
point. Yeah, so he was a Heisman Trophy winner. Mm-hmm. We played him, you know, in there at the Orange Bowl. That was where they played their games, was in the Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm. Did not go well for the Red Raiders that night. The final score was 60-10.
Vinny could sling it, man.
Oh, my goodness. And he had this guy named Michael Irvin on his team.
I heard of that guy.
Yeah. Benny Blades, some other famous athletes I'm sure I'm forgetting. But obviously those guys were loaded. Andre Ware was at the University of Houston.
That's right.
You know, at my time at Texas Tech, he won the Heisman Trophy after I graduated the year after. So, yeah, just a guy named Eric Metcalf. Eric's dad played for the Cardinals. Eric played for the Browns. So you had an opportunity to play against let me put it this way. I was standing over here on the sideline. They were out on the field playing, but I got to, you know, have a front row seat and that sort of thing. So,
you know, and to a lesser degree, at a high school level, I got to be on the field with the likes of, you know, Roy Williams at Permian and Cedric Benson and you know, all of those guys that were just game wreckers and just you could see at that level, like, you're so much more advanced. It's like men playing with boys, really. Yeah. It really isn't fair.
Yeah.
So you graduate Tech. What was your degree?
I studied mass communications. And
be a sportcaster? Is that what your game was?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's what I wanted to do.
You got a great voice for it.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I looked up to people like Brent Musburger, obviously Jim Nance, people like that hadn't come around and that sort of thing. Al Michaels, you know, we still see him on, you know, professional football and that sort of thing. And that was one of the things that was kind of cool when my son was going to Midland Christian. I think I was telling this before we hit record. We had an opportunity, myself and another gentleman there, said, hey, man, would you help us broadcast the game? So we started off it was an audio broadcast, and then this organization called the NFHS Network came along and said, hey, we have some streaming technology, and you can actually provide the video feed. And so Midland Christian traveled far and wide. I mean, we went to, I think I was telling you earlier, we went to Fayetteville, Arkansas that year, we went to Shreveport, Louisiana that year.
We had Midland Christian always had a top-notch team, and they're in taps, so it's always harder for them to find competition.
Yep.
One of the funniest, saddest things I ever heard was out at Grande Communication Stadium, and I was officiating a playoff game. It was like a first-round playoff game. And you know how the officials' locker room, the wall goes pretty much to the ceiling, but there's a gap about like that. So you can hear the visiting team locker room.
Right.
And that coach tells his kids, boys, this is going to be the nicest field you ever play on. Just go out and enjoy the day. And they got blown out, and I thought, golly, what a terrible thing to lead off with your team. But it really is that difference in competition level. So I bet you guys did have to travel quite a bit.
We did. I my son was on the varsity all 4 years, and he contributed, obviously, a little more each year. But I did the math. We drove, check this out, Justin, 5,000 miles per season, and that was just in football. I can remember being excited that we would only have to drive to Fort Worth or El Paso. Right. I felt like that was a
win.
That was a close game.
Yeah, that was a win.
You know, so yeah, they would have to travel all over.
It was basically a home game.
Yeah, for sure. So it's some pretty crazy thing. And you stop and think about what families in West Texas are willing and able to do to follow their kids. And so a lot of times you have to travel.
I watched my brother played baseball at a high level.
Yeah.
He played at Oklahoma State and then on at Oklahoma City University. And before he played in the minors for a year and a half, maybe 2 years for the Angels. And I remember watching my parents, and he was 8 years younger than me. So I've basically two different childhoods.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, out here you're 5 hours from anything worth, that kind of a level of attention. And they travel all over the place just to get looks.
Yeah, and you see this with the travel sports. A lot of families here drive 300 miles on a weekend. That's just one way for the kids to play soccer or volleyball or basketball or travel baseball or whatever.
Earlier this year, I got to go to Phoenix with that kid that plays for Keller High School, Fisher.
Yeah,
and I was there for a full week in Phoenix with him. His mom was like, "Hey, do you want to take him?" I was like, "Sure," and I remember standing there and I was like, how do parents do this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm fortunate. I have a job that's, I can move around, do some things.
Yeah.
We have the means to do it, those types of things. And then I started thinking, like, these are club teams. And so the parents are paying for their kids to be on here. Imagine paying for your kid to be on the team and he's not a starter.
Right.
Because they're not all starters.
Right.
It's just really, really interesting to me. And it's honestly odd. Like, I don't have kids that do that kind of stuff. So for me, it was like, whoa. Like,
yeah. It's very eye-opening.
This can't be cheap,
No, it's not.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a challenge. But, that just seems to be the way. And, talk about recruiting. Obviously the coaches come out here. They see the players. With the technology, they're able to see the films, the huddle highlights and things like that. But these kids, in the summers, they're going to those universities. They're going to UT. They're going to Tech. They're going to A&M. They're going to West Texas State. They're going to UTEP. Wherever
it is.
They're
going to
camps. Yeah. And if you don't show up at those camps, you're not on the radars of those schools. And then you have either part-time or full-time coaches. I'm sure they have some classroom responsibilities as well. But they are the official recruiting coordinator for XYZ High School to help bridge that gap for all the student athletes, male and female, and all the different sports that they represent, to try and help those student athletes get plugged into different universities at the Division I, II, and III level.
Crazy. It's way different than when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure when you were also.
Yeah.
I mean, you only had like 10 grades probably when you were in there. But anyway, so at what point did you go, you know what, man? Insurance seems like the life for me.
I never it's funny that you say that, because I got in the insurance business until I could find a real job.
Yeah, so that was how long ago?
33 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm still looking for that real job. So, no, literally, I had a recruiter come to me. Back then, life insurance companies like Northwestern Mutual and Mass Mutual and MetLife, and the list goes on and on and on, had what they call career programs. And so they would come to the college campuses and they would say, hey, we want to recruit you into the life insurance business. We want you to do life insurance. We want you to do annuities. We want you to do estate planning and things of that nature. So that's kind of where I got my start. And then I learned, pretty early on that I wasn't very good at it. Because they would say, hey, you need to sell life insurance and these financial services products to people 10 years older than you and 10 years younger than you. So I didn't know many 12-year-olds.
That had the means to buy insurance.
Yeah.
Did they come to Tech and recruit you?
Yeah, there was.
So they said, look at this MassCom kid. We're going to get him an insurance.
There was an active recruiting coordinator for that area. And again, I said, well, I'll do that until I can literally find a real job.
So you start with whom?
Started with Mass Mutual.
Okay.
Massachusetts Mutual. And they had a tremendous presence in the Lubbock market. A guy named Jay Agin was the general agent, had been there for many, many years, had a lot of really, really successful life insurance agents that had been there for many years to this day that are very plugged into that community, that are a vital part of that community, and that sort of thing. But it just wasn't my cup of tea. So I graduated and quickly moved over into the employee benefit arena. So
you started with Mass Mutual. You hadn't graduated yet.
Well, I just graduated college.
Okay.
And so I was in their career program, but I could see the writing on the wall pretty soon, you know, that I was not going to be successful. I'm telling you, if you meet a really successful life insurance agent, that is a salesman's salesman. That person knows how to sell, because it's kind of a, you know, there's not a lot of,
well, you're selling on some pretty dark stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. You it's know, not and, a fun conversation.
Right. So I was hooked up with a guy that, you know, was working in the Odessa market, and he was very heavily involved in the employee benefit business.
So when you graduated, you left Lubbock and came back to Odessa.
I did. So I was kind of splitting my time between both communities, but obviously knew more people. And I give a shout out to a guy over in Odessa who is a defense attorney, or I'm trying to think of the right word, but a guy named Robert White. So if you live in Midland, Odessa, you see Robert White's commercials on television. But Robert represents people that are involved in an accident, whichever kind of attorney.
Oh, he's
is.
The Texas Hammer.
Well, he's not that guy. He's like the Texas Hammer. But I can remember going to Robert White's office. He was a referral. And he said, Dow, get out a piece of paper. And he said, I'm going to give you a list of these are all the people that you need to go see. So here's this guy, okay? I didn't know him from Adam. His wife, I knew her brother. So I knew each other that way. But I'll just never forget. And again, we go back to this, who do you know, Justin, in your life that just extended the hand of friendship, or he or she did something for you to help you, you know, give you a hand up in your business or in life or whatever. And Robert White was one of those guys. He said, you need to go see these 50 people. And I just, you know, I went to every single one of them, and I said, Robert White said I needed to come see you. And nobody threw me out on my ear.
In that moment, obviously you recognize what that did for you now.
Sure.
And probably recognized that years ago. But in that moment, did you recognize what was being done for you? Because I know personally, when I'm in that moment, I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah.
What's this list? It's probably a bunch of people you don't even want to talk to. You know,
yeah.
Real skeptical of it all. In that moment, you didn't recognize that.
I didn't. I was so young in the business that I like, well, is I guess this is normal.
Yeah, this is how it goes, I guess.
You know, and it was, and the longer you do it, you know how abnormal it is. I mean, you would ask people for references and they wouldn't.
I would think they'd be pretty tight-lipped about that stuff.
I mean, they wouldn't even give you their brother-in-law's name, who they hate, you know, kind of a deal. So,
sell him some life insurance. I'm wishing some bad things for that dude.
Right. You know, so yeah, it was entirely unusual. So shout out to Robert White if you're listening. And,
he's still kicking around Odessa.
Yeah. And here's the crazy thing. So, my brother, my youngest brother, he was a haberdasher. And, so he was in the clothing, men's clothing business. And I said, go see Robert White. And so what does Robert White do? He buys quite a bit of clothes from my brother named Zane. And he's like, hey, you need to go see all these people. So the same thing he did for me, he did for my brother Zane.
With high fashion.
Yeah. And he says, you need to go see this guy and this guy.
Is Zane still a haberdasher? Because I like a good coat.
he is a landman slash in the right of way business. So he works came over to the dark side.
Yeah,
so he works with cities and different folks doing whatever landman and right away folks do. I can't even really speak to it. So
that's not my thing. I oftentimes wonder, in retrospect, years later, decades later, it's easy to look back and go, you know, that was exactly what I needed in that time. And I just wonder how many times I missed that and didn't appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah, for sure.
And then that sort of gets lost to time. I wonder how many of those things I will never appreciate.
Yeah.
So I don't guess that matters a whole lot in the big picture, but it's always interested me. I have yet to come across somebody that in real time was like, man, that's amazing that guy did that for me.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So, hindsight's always 20/20, and you see these little markers in your life when somebody, you know, extended a hand to you. I would also give a shout out to a lady named Wanda Spears. Wanda was my manager and my boss at Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas. And I'm gonna tell this story, and you're probably gonna drop your teeth when I tell you this.
I hope not. That's okay. My moneymaker right now.
And I'm not even making this up. Dude, I was so bad at the life insurance business. I have shown my kids how much I made each of the years, the first 5 years I was in it. And it was poverty level.
Did you adjust for inflation?
No, but like if you were
still,
to ask.
It's still like.
Oh, it is scary, embarrassingly low.
Yeah.
I literally had three jobs when I went to work for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas. I was in the life insurance business, and I was in the employee benefit business, and that's what people knew that I did. I also stock shelves for a company called Nabisco. They make some pretty rad cookies. Yeah, they're really good.
They eat great crackers, too.
Yeah. And I also, in my early 20s, my third job with two kids, I had a paper route.
Nice.
And I had two of the roughest apartment complexes in Midland, Texas, and they actually paid me extra money to walk through there in the dark in the morning and deliver papers and not get killed.
Hey, that's awesome. You know what? You went from playing football in Tokyo with Barry Sanders and flying near first class to that.
Yeah.
How crazy.
So
and not to belabor that point, did you ever at any point think, what the heck has happened here?
Yeah. No, it was it was a scary time.
Sure.
You know, again, married,
two kids.
And
how old are you?
I'm probably like 20. I'm in my mid-20s. Not doing super well.
Yeah.
But I played the game. No one knew. Like, if you were to encounter me, I'll give you an example. The Walmart on North Midland Drive in the Loop in here in Midland, I worked for Nabisco. Again, as a part-time job, just extra hours and that sort of thing, with that store open, however many years ago that was.
Forever ago.
Yeah, so a long time ago. But if I had encountered you in that store, you would have thought I was buying Nabisco products because I was not about to let you know that I was stocking those grocery shelves with the Nabisco products. And I can remember the door opening when I was collecting for the newspaper. And all of a sudden, the guy on the other side of the door, we knew each other, but he didn't know I had a paper route. And it was very humbling and bordered on humiliating, but you still had to do whatever you had to do to provide for your family.
I bet if you asked that guy if he's worth anything, he probably had a lot of respect for that.
Well, he was pretty shocked.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain people. Like I saw a guy yesterday. I voted early in the election, and he was one of my newspaper customers. And our eyes didn't meet. You know, you're not supposed to talk while you're casting your vote and that sort of thing in the polling centers or whatever. But yeah, he would remember that. And so
and you certainly do.
Oh, I absolutely. And you just kind of had to swallow your pride.
Sure.
And you just had to do what you had to do to provide for your family. And trust me, my kids know that story. They hate that story because they've heard that story over and over and over again.
But that's the only reason they hate that story. Yeah. It's not because, hey, Dad was down for the cause.
Sure.
It's because they're tired of you telling them. You understand what this didn't happen overnight.
Right.
Like, yeah.
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 Yeah. I jokingly say that, you know, your kids kind of feel like there's some clipboard that you as an adult, you go out there and you sign up for. And so shout out to David Arrington and all that he's done in his life. Yeah. Okay. You don't sign up to be David Arrington. You get up every day and you work your rear end off. Mm-hmm. And then if you're lucky and all the stars align, and I'm not trying to take away anything that David did or didn't do, but here's a guy who is uber successful. And you and I, having lived in this community, whether you live here or you just travel in from time to time, you know the names.
Sure.
Okay. You know the Aaron Marquezes. You know the Duke Edwards. You know these different people.
You know the Scarboroughs, the Beals, the Calvins, the Mavies, all of those names.
Yeah. You know, so all these different people that have had uber success. And, oh, by the way, are some of the most philanthropic people that you'll ever come across. But they have those same stories, you know? And that's what's so neat is to hear the backstories about all these different people and how they were just this close to having to declare bankruptcy. Or maybe they did declare bankruptcy.
Yeah, in some cases, started businesses, failed miserably, and then did it again, and that is unbelievable to me. Because that would happen to me once, and I'd be like, well, I guess I'm just going to work for somebody the rest of my life.
Yeah.
And what's going back to what you said about your kids, it's funny. I was asked by one of my daughters, because I work from home, and so they see me in there in my office every day, and she goes, how do you make money?
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean? And she's like, well, what do you do? I was like, what do you think I do? She says, I don't know. I see you standing at your desk. I'm standing desk because I'm very healthy. but I actually really like that. But she's like, you're standing at your desk all day. You're working on your computers. And then you just get paid really well.
Right,
and I was like, is that really what you think I do?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, what do you do? And I was like, most of the time I'm researching something or a better way to do something or process thing. And then if something happens, I deal with it because I know how to deal with it because I've done it for a long time. I have the experience to deal with it. I said, listen, I'm very fortunate because I've finally gotten to a point in my life where I'm no longer paid for my time. I'm paid for the value that I bring to the company, and I pray that everyone gets there at some point. But man, when you're working a real job, career type job, and then you're stocking shelves and you're throwing papers, did you at some point think there's no end to this?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You're just at your lowest low. You're like, it can't get any worse than this. And here's, this is just kind of, I remember this, like, dude, you and I are sitting here, I can visualize this. I can remember this dude, I go to collect for the newspaper, right? He don't want to pay me, right? And that's, you know, that's my money. It's not a lot of money, but it's my money.
Yeah.
He's in one of those apartment complexes that I'm getting paid extra money to throw in.
Getting hazard pay to go.
Oh, dead serious, hazard pay. I walk into his apartment and I say some things to him like, you need to give me the money for the newspaper, knowing full well he could have shot me in and of that moment and I would have been in the wrong. I had no right to go in there.
Sure.
And I wasn't going in there to rough him up or anything like that, but I'm like, dude, I'm out here busting my rear end.
Right. You don't know what I have going on.
Exactly.
You don't know why that money, what it means.
Exactly. And it's kind of like it just snapped in that moment. So I remember the day that I interviewed for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Texas, and I went to interview for that job. Guess what? I had to throw those papers before I went to that interview. When my son was born, my second child, I had to throw those newspapers before I took my wife to the hospital to deliver that baby.
Wow.
You know? And then I had to get up and do it again the next morning. You know, it was just one of those really humbling experiences. And then when this lady named Wanda Spears, you know, came into my life and she's like, hey, we're going to pay you $40,000 for a base salary. And then if you do well, we're going to pay you another $40,000. We're going to pay you $80,000. Dude, I had no idea. I thought to myself, I will not be able to spend it all.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
And then you have two or three kids and, you know, private school and all this other stuff. You don't have a problem.
Well, it turns out there's no shortage of things to spend extra income on.
It's just nuts. Sure. But yeah, no, I just look at that, just that marker in my life about how things could have gone so south. In fact, I didn't think they could go any more south than that, but they could, for sure. You know,
you still had, you had jobs,
you know,
those could go away.
Yeah, for sure. And then you get into this position where you really, you don't know, come here from Sikkim about what it is that you're doing. you know, and you just kind of figure it out on the fly. And that's kind of when this guy, we're sitting in here in this guy's office, this guy named Don Crawford. And the funny thing about it was, before I even met Don, before I even went to work for Don many years later, before he was my top salesperson, I got in my car one day. So I had this epiphany, right? And I can remember driving to Crane, and I can remember driving to McCamey and Ira Ann and Rankin and
just Wink all and Andrews of the and no all shortage of small towns.
Yeah, all these towns around here. And I thought to myself, these people need health insurance. These people need employee benefits. And dude, I'm telling you, the vast majority of the time I would walk in and they would say, we have Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas, and our agent is Don Crawford. I was like, oh, okay. And then I go to the next place. I go to the school, or to the hospital, or the county, or the city, or whatever. And it was the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over. I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah,
this is
Don Crawford.
Crawford guy, right?
Like E.F. Hutton. That dude's everywhere. Goodness.
Yeah, you know.
Shout out to E.F. Hutton. And a lot of people are going to know that reference.
That's right. But, you know, and then like I said, going to work at Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and you know, if you were to turn the camera around right now, you see all these plaques over there on the wall. Okay, of these sales contests that I won. But the fact of the matter is, I won a lot of those sales awards because of Don Crawford, because he wrote a lot of business and he retained a lot of business. Mr. Crawford worked in this market in West Texas for over 50 years. And so you ask me, like, why do you still call it Don Crawford right. and Associates? It will always be a Don Crawford and Associates, because to me it's the brand.
Right.
You know, and it would be crazy of me to change that name. Someday I may have to, may not have a choice, I don't know. But when I bought the business from Don and his wife Beth, I said, can I continue to call this Don Crawford and Associates? And they go, absolutely, we'd be honored if you do that. Yeah. So you just kind of wanna like, I view myself as like, I'm just the manager of this thing. Yeah, I'm the owner of this business, but really I'm managing this reputation that he created over the course of 50 years.
What a heavy responsibility.
Oh, absolutely. And I feel the weight of that responsibility.
I mean, you could change the name and remove some of that responsibility, but you leaned into that. And that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
How long into your career did you start thinking, I think I might want to own this thing?
Yeah, so he reached out to me in 2010. His succession plan had kind of changed, without getting into a lot of details. And he just said, hey, would you be interested in coming to work over here? And I was in a position, I'd already left Blue Cross at that time, and I was in a position of transition and was like, yeah, I'll come to work over there. And so he...
might as well. You have everyone's business everywhere.
Yeah. So, and so he said, hey, and he made it abundantly clear to me. He said, look, I'm going to work for as long as I want to work. I mean, he was just one of those guys. He didn't have to work. He didn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to. There was something about getting up every workday and going to the office and helping people with their issues, their problems. So in his particular case, providing a solution to pay for healthcare expenses or dental expenses or vision expenses and that sort of thing. And so that's what he was all about. He thrived, and I watched him, you know, from a distance. I watched him, and that's what gave him his reason for getting up every day, and that was his purpose in life. And he did it until he was almost 90 years old. And just, you know, to this day, I was telling you before we hit record, I will still, even though he passed away a couple years ago, I will still to this day call and say, this is Dal Watson with Don Crawford's office, and I get right through. If I would just say, hey, this is Dal Watson calling, I'm calling for the county judge, or I'm calling for the hospital administrator, or I'm calling for the city manager, whatever, I probably, with my own name, wouldn't get through.
But you'd at least have to run a few more traps.
Exactly. So I just say, with Don Crawford's office, and there's that, his name resonates with people throughout this area. Now, obviously, with an older crowd, or older generation, some of that doesn't, you know, translate down to the younger generation, but... Anyway, it's just kind of one of those brands that I just feel like it's my responsibility to do everything that I can to honor his name and his legacy. And that's how the other people here in this office, his daughter that was with him since day one, she works here. And then some ladies that worked at Blue Cross and Blue Shield that knew Don and that sort of thing. And so they felt the same way about him. It was kind of like the feeling you would have towards, say, like a grandparent. Mm-hmm. That's the feeling I think that we all kind of had towards him.
And so when he asked you to come over, he said, hey, I'm going to work as long as I want to work.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I want someone to take the business over, I assume.
Right.
When he said that to you, had you already been thinking about doing something on your own, or was that something that then you had to wrap your head around potentially becoming an owner operator?
Yeah.
And how did you make that transition mentally?
You know, I Justin, I really couldn't like allow my brain to go there. I was just so busy doing life. I was busy helping raise three children. I was busy helping you know, them with their different station in life, whether it be, you know, their you know, their growing up years or their college years or whatever. You know, we get so busy, and I think that's one reason why we can say, hey, we've known each other 30 plus years and it seems like we just met yesterday, because right. We've been so busy the last 30 years just living life. And you know, let's face it, it is a grind.
Mm.
Right? And you got to get up every single day and do what it takes to get to the next day and that sort of thing. And so yeah, I think I just never really allowed myself to do that. And then once I did buy the business, then all of a sudden, all I had ever been up until that point, I had never been anybody's boss all those many years. I had always just been a salesperson. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden I'm making decisions about payroll and 401k and building insurance and all these different things that I had a little bit of knowledge about but didn't have a whole lot of knowledge about. So I just really tried to surround myself with the type of people and the professionals that you could hire, different administrators and that sort of thing, that could help me answer all these many questions that I never had to answer before.
Yeah, and what a scary thing.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden you're like thrust into this position and you realize not only is your family dependent on these decisions you're making, is the people that work here are
absolutely
dependent on that as well. A lot of stress in that.
Yep.
So it's funny. I think a lot of people think that owning a business or whatever, there's a lot of freedom in that, and it can look like there's freedom in that. I can tell you from watching my dad do it for my entire life, pretty much, you're only so free.
Oh, yeah.
You can't completely unchain from it ever.
Yeah.
And I just remember that. And it's an interesting thought. When you go to work for Don with this idea of a transition plan, and you go to your wife and say, hey, guess what? This is what I'm going to do. Did you tell her, ultimately, we're going to own this one day? Or did you say, this is a good thing for our family right now. Let's do this.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of that stuff was on the horizon. We hadn't talked through any of the particulars or anything like that. So it was just kind of this thing that was out there on the horizon.
Almost didn't seem real.
It's
so far away.
Exactly. Yeah, and that sort of thing. And so yeah, you just I find myself saying this more and more all the time. You don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Right.
You know, and then all of a sudden throw in this thing called COVID. You know, nobody saw that coming. And just the curveball that it was for everybody,
sure.
Not just for me, for everybody.
When did you take actual ownership of the company?
2019, January 1, 2019.
So just in time.
Just in time.
Yeah.
Just in time. So, yeah. So it was
Don got you again.
Yeah. So it was a crazy time.
Sure.
Obviously, because of our relationship with the healthcare delivery and that sort of thing, there was obviously a lot of people that had a lot of questions.
Sure.
And how all this is. There was obviously a lot of new rules and regulations from a federal standpoint about what insurance carriers and employers that sponsored employer health plans were going to all of a sudden have to be required to do. Yeah, it was like, have you ever seen the movie Groundhog's Day?
Oh yeah.
You know, and I don't know about you, but like Bill Murray, right?
Mm-hmm.
So about 20 days before he stops starting the day over.
And he figures it out.
Right? You're about to go mad. You're sitting there in the theater and like, if you start this day over,
if I have to see this one more time.
One more time, I'm going to scream bloody murder. And then they did it like 20 or 25 more times. That's kind of like what COVID was. And you would go home, and this is going to tell something about me, but you go home, and my flavor was Fox News, right? And sure. So you'd go home and you try to watch and try to figure out what's going on in the world, not just in our nation, but in the world.
Right.
What is going on? And are we going to be able to survive this? We had this invisible enemy, if you will, and none of us knew what to do. It was the craziest thing.
Sure. Yeah, no one knew. And it's created some circumstances that are extremely unfortunate as far as trust go. And going forward, similar to what you're saying about the purchase of the business so far out, regaining trust seems so far out to me
right.
that I don't know when that happens or if that happens.
Right.
But it's interesting when you take possession of the company in 2019, you get a year and you're like, okay, I've got to figure out how to run a business and own it and manage people and do all this stuff. And then you get through that year, January, February, and then all of a sudden, now you obviously you're still learning all of those moves, and now you've got to learn how to navigate through COVID or a difficult situation that no one's ever navigated through before. How'd you do all that? Like, where were your sources of information, comfort, all of those things? Where did you come across how to get through that and also figure out how to run and manage a business?
Yeah, I think, again, a lot of it has to do with the people that you align yourself with. You know, so I'm smart enough to know. I think when early on in life, you want to have all the answers to all the questions that people will ask you.
I always felt like I had to.
Yeah.
Even though I didn't.
Right.
Start talking
You finally, by your late 20s, early 30s, figure out, like, I can't be that person. Like, that person doesn't exist. Maybe it's Elon Musk. I don't know. Man, that guy's pretty sharp, you know. He seems to have an answer for everything, but I was definitely not him.
Yeah, no one is.
So
it's a one of one.
So, you know, a lot of the things that Don had established relationship-wise from his CPA firm or the banking people that he dealt with or whatever, like, my attitude was, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. Again, I was very fortunate that his daughter, who had helped him with the business for so many years, to this day is our office manager. And so I relied heavily upon her knowledge, not only about Don's business, but just about the business in general.
She had a tremendous amount of tribal knowledge for you to lean on. That's great.
Absolutely. So I think you want to surround yourself with the kind of people that can help you through those times. Obviously, in the oil and gas industry out here, and again, I'm in the insurance business, but I'm in the oil and gas business because that's who a lot of my customers are, right? But we got the double whammy, right, out here. And you saw that in y'all's business,
sure.
You know, there at Wildcat too, right? And so, not only did you have oil prices plummet, what was negative 30 something
negative
for one day,
$46
or something like that.
At that point, when we were watching that's
crazy.
You start laughing,
yeah.
Like, oh, okay, this is stupid. I had friends calling me, going, that aren't in the oil and gas business. Hey man, should we buy some oil? And I was like, no. If you want to, go ahead.
Right.
I'm not gonna.
Yeah, so obviously we just did everything that we could to help our customers, because obviously you got to be nimble and you got to work with them. Obviously their budgets were different, what they were able to do and not do. Obviously, you know, most business owners don't want to lay off their employees if they don't have to. But you know, you saw those decisions that they were making. So you kind of learn from your customers too about how they were addressing the situation personally. And we were all learning on the fly.
Yeah. And that's again, you can go back after the fact and look at it and say, man, we made these mistakes.
Yeah.
And I think that it serves people well to be able to admit when they made a mistake.
Sure.
I think that's one of the reasons a lot of people are having, at least for me personally, a lot of the issues I have with sort of the ruling class, just say you messed it up.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. You're a human being.
Right.
You didn't know either.
Right.
I'm fine with that. And it just seems like they're unwilling to do that. And in my mind, that is an abject lesson in failed leadership.
Right.
If you can't say I messed up, you're an ineffective leader.
Yeah.
Because no one expects you to get it perfect every time.
Yeah. You know, so pre-pandemic, probably the unemployment rate here in West Texas, you probably know this as much as anybody else, but was probably what, 2.5%, 2%.
Yeah, it wasn't much. Like
that. Yeah, it was incredibly low.
And well, then, everybody came out of 2019 thinking oil's just going to keep skyrocketing. Yeah. We're good to go.
Yeah, for sure. This is never going to end. Ha, ha, ha. And then
it's never going to end again.
Yeah. And then you go from having some of the lowest unemployment in the nation to some of the highest unemployment in the nation. And then fast forward to, you know, 2022, 2023, we're back down to 2.5% unemployment. I mean, like you see help wanted signs everywhere throughout West Texas. And if you want to giggle sometime, go out to our regional or our international airport or our spaceport.
The space station?
Yeah, it's the space.
We can, spaceport, that's right.
Yeah. But just to see the number of cars, and not only cars, but oil field related type vehicles that are in these parking lots. And those vehicles represent a worker that doesn't even live around here.
Right.
He flies in here. Yeah,
they staged that there for them to get in and drive, and he's going to park it there, yeah. and the next guy's going to get in it.
Exactly. And it's the craziest thing. And so it wasn't that long ago that I flew up to Denver, and on my way up there, you saw a certain segment of the population who was going home on their – they had their 14 days on, and now they were going to go do their 14 days off or however that works. And then on the trip back from Denver to Midland, Odessa, about an hour flight, you had a different group.
The relief crew
that was going to go do their 14-day on before they did their 14-day off or whatever or however that works. But, yeah, it's a fascinating to live in this area. And when you – I think every time Ray Perryman, who's an economist, he lives in Odessa, but his think tank is down there around Waco in that area. But Ray Perryman – every time he speaks publicly, I go listen to the guy because he's fascinating to listen to. Because he's an economist, right? And he studied at Rice, and he's a brainiac. His IQ is off the chart. But just to see some of the statistics that he talks about the future of this area, because let's face it, if the shale game, if that hadn't come into play, this area would have continued to decline and decline and decline. But because of fracking and whether you hate it or you don't, that has made for so many opportunities in our part of the world and really around the world. And so it's just crazy to think about all that goes on here in this, you know, say 100, 150 mile region.
It's amazing to think about how long this region's been producing at the level that it produces oil at. It's remarkable.
Yeah. And the technology really, truly just keeps changing and getting better.
And just making it more accessible.
Yeah, and come to think, you know, right now the Interstate 20 has been through here for ever since the interstate system was started under the Truman administration in the 1960s. But at some point they're talking about maybe bringing I-27 that goes from Amarillo to Lubbock down through here. Okay, and then they're going to have this Interstate 15 that's been approved now that's going to start over in Georgia. Is going to call all the way cross country. Is going to be here. So all of a sudden, you're going to have potentially, right, if everything lines up the way the stars are lined up right now, you could have three interstate systems rolling through this area, and it's just going to be. You'll probably live to see it. Maybe I'll be.
I won't live here
to
see it. I'll tell you that.
But
much.
It's going to be, dude. It's going to be nuts.
It will be crazy. It will be absolutely crazy. Yeah. So something interesting you said. You know, you take over the business, and I think you're absolutely smart to say, you know, hey, this thing's running like a top. I don't need to change anything. But then you said something also that kind of piqued my interest, and that was the name Don Crawford and Associates doesn't necessarily resonate with some of the younger crowd. They just don't know.
Yeah.
And as the oil field continues to evolve out here, you're seeing younger and younger CEOs and chairmen, and Aaron's one of them, and now Tripp is the CEO of Wildcat, just an example. Tripp's 30 years old.
Yeah.
Now, Duke knows that name.
Sure.
But Tripp doesn't. And so as the leader of the company, how are you sort of now, because you've got to try to grow into that segment, I would think. How are you doing that? And how are you showing them that, hey, this name has meaning, not just a guy's name?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of times your employees, because let's face it out here, because there is low unemployment, there's a certain expectation of what an employer will or will not provide, and they attribute a dollar value to that. So, and it's like, honestly, Justin, I mean, we kind of live in a bubble here in West Texas.
It's an interesting place.
You know, so it's it's not like this everywhere, obviously, right? But out here, if you're not willing to provide, see, the employee benefits is just part of the overall compensation package. And then obviously when you have 2.5% unemployment, you know, a guy may be willing to move down the street for $2 or $3 an hour or whatever. But you're going to have to provide some level of employee benefit, be it, you know, just like medical insurance, dental, vision, whatever, or obviously the 401k, you know, that kind of thing.
You'll never get an employee if you don't provide something.
Exactly. Yeah. And so you're competing for that employee, and so it matters on all these different kinds of scales. So like what I said, you can't be all things to all people. The analogy that I try to use with business owners is, look, we're sitting at your conference table, kind of like we're sitting at the, and maybe it's a longer, wider conference table there, but you've got your banker, okay, you've got your CFO, you got your financial guy, you know, the list goes on and goes, your CIO, your CFO, the CTO, whatever, right? Me as a business owner, I just want to have the seat at the table or the guy that's making the recommendations for the employee benefits. That's all I want to be. I can't be all those other things that those other people are going to be. And I don't even want to try to pretend to be that. Now, when I early on in the business, maybe I wanted to try to fake it till I make it kind of a deal and be you know, put on airs and be things that I was not. But as I've gotten older and wiser, you just know, hey, I'm going to stay in my lane and I'm going to do what I do really well. And either you like my ideas or you don't, or you like this guy's or gal's ideas about how to approach it differently or whatever. But I will tell you, we have a customer that has been with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas and is a customer of ours since the late 1940s.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy? You know, they've never been with somebody else. Now, that's not to say one day they won't make a change or whatever, but a lot of Don's customers had been his customers from so when he moved here, he was the regional manager in the Abilene office from 66 to 69. So when he moved here in 69, there are still a fair number of customers that have been Don Crawford and Associate / Blue Cross and Blue Shield customers for that entire period of time. And it's just crazy to think about, but it happens.
Yeah. Have you seen where maybe longtime customers like that, when their kids come up, because it's very, again, it's very unique out here. Yeah. You have a lot of people that now I'm going to start a business. Have you seen any, like, hey, you need to call Dial over there?
Yeah.
They're good.
I think, you know, that old adage of you get what you pay for kind of a deal. And if you want some nickel and dime thing, go for it. I'd be honest with you. I really don't want to be your agent because I don't want the angry phone calls from you at night and on the weekends and that sort of thing. So there's a certain level of product that we deliver here. And a lot of it has again to do with Blue Cross or United Healthcare, or, you know, whatever. There's all different kinds, but you want to deliver this certain level of service. And for the guy out there or the gal out there that's running a business and they want to maybe cut corners or whatever, you just kind of graciously just step away.
Right.
You know. So and here's a funny thing, and there's a word for this, and I don't know what the word is. Some one of your listeners, one of your million listeners, will know this, right? But it's like, think about the term Xerox. It was commonly associated with the word copy. So, hey, would you go make me a Xerox of this,
right,
as opposed to would you make a copy of this? Or, hey, Justin, let's go get a Coke.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what kind of Coke
I'll take
do
a Sprite.
You want?
Yeah,
I'll take a Sprite. And I remember one time when this lady goes, I got my Blue Cross and Blue Shield with Aetna. I was like, what? Those are two different companies.
Yeah.
But she associated her health care coverage
Blue Cross
to her Blue Cross and Blue Shield, but in her particular situation, that was with Aetna. That's what every American corporation wants to be. They want to be Xerox. They want to be Coke. They want to be Amazon or Tesla or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Fill in the blank. That's what every company aspires to be, whether they know that or not.
What's interesting about that, I interviewed a guy one time for a marketing position, and he had been in marketing with Red Bull.
Okay.
And during the interview, he said, look, here's what I'll tell you. He goes, what is Red Bull? And I said, it's a drink. And he goes, yeah. He goes, when you think of Red Bull, what do you think of? And I was like, crazy airplanes and things like that. He goes,
right.
That's not an accident.
Yeah.
He said, we wanted to be more than a drink. We wanted to be a lifestyle brand.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I look at like the F1 cars and stuff, and I know what those cost. And I'm like, how many of those drinks are they selling? Good grief. Like,
yeah.
They do all of that,
yeah,
with energy drinks. Like, right. It's weird. It's crazy. But you're right. If you can get to the point where you are the Xerox, I mean, then people just know you.
Right.
And it sounds like, to an extent, Don Crawford had kind of done that.
Yeah,
with his
sure.
name, you know, and I think it's amazing that you kept the name, and I know that that honors his family.
Sure.
But what's next for Dal and his journey? What are you doing now?
Yeah, so now that all three of my kids are grown, I've got two grandkids. Shout out to the grandkids. They're not.
I have old. A grandkid.
Yeah. That's right, you do.
Yeah.
I forgot about that. Awesome, man.
It's pretty cool.
Grandkids are awesome.
They're pretty cool.
I keep myself busy officiating sports, I think, as you well know. And so I officiate high school football, high school basketball, and high school baseball. And I stay pretty busy around the year, when obviously during the school year, officiating sports. And I will tell you that I'm not very good at golf, and I can prove that if you take me to play golf. I'm not a patient person.
You just invite yourself to a golf game with me? That's ridiculous.
Possibly.
You remember when I won that wedge and I forgot it, and then you called me like, hey, I got your wedge.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
I still use that wedge.
I tried to sell it on eBay, but I didn't.
It wasn't that great of a wedge. Yeah. I still have it, though. I use it.
but yeah, so, you know, I'm not a real patient person, so I don't do well at hunting or fishing or anything like that. But I really thoroughly enjoy being around student athletes, being around coaches, been around the game, and it's just something that one day when I'm too old, fat, and slow, which that day's coming quicker than I wanted to do it, I'll be sad, because it's been a lot of fun to participate in that way.
Yeah, I know. Like I said, 16 years of officiating football out here with you guys. There are times I miss it. Like I was telling you before we were recording, for that to have been part of my life for 16 years, I was telling my wife, I was like, there's only one other thing that's been a part of my life longer than that, and it's her.
Yeah.
And it's weird to think that way. And so, and it's even weirder that to do that for 16 years, now when I think back on it, my last game was in 2010.
Yeah.
And I don't even think that I ever did that until I go to a football game and I start going, I kind of miss this.
Yeah.
Kind of get itchy, you know? It was so much fun. And it was so much fun. The game itself was fun, but being around you guys was the best. And again, like I said, the way you guys treated me coming in definitely impacted the rest of my life in the most positive way. And being able to keep a close group of friends and you guys, we all stay in touch. And you're right. It's like we can go forever without speaking, and then it's like we never stopped.
Right. We just razz each other on Facebook.
Of course. And social media has made that stuff a lot better.
Oh, for sure.
But I you're one of my favorite people in the world. I love you to death. And I couldn't continue coming out here and not try to sit down and talk to you and tell you that, if nothing else.
Yeah. Well, I'm honored that you did that, because I consider you a close friend, even though our ages were not that close in age. But, dude, kudos to you for getting out here and doing this. I know Aaron encouraged you to strike out on your own. But, dude, look at this guy. He looks sharp. It was fun to watch you set up this gig here in my office.
And you did just watch. You didn't help.
I didn't, because I
you
was
moved,
like,
you
this
moved
is
some papers off.
This
and then
is
I
so
the
cool. But no, kudos to you, because this is really, really cool. I'll be honest with you. I thought years ago about maybe starting a podcast, but to actually go through the process from start to finish, I think I have an appreciation for what it is that you're doing. And dude, kudos to you for what you're doing here, man. This is awesome. I will tell you, like we talked about before we hit record, for four seasons, I helped produce a football broadcast. And we did that, you know, every fall. And dude, it was like every week something new would go wrong, and you would have a new curveball that was being thrown at you, and you just had to figure it out on the fly. I can remember sitting in the stands. We're sitting at Fort Worth Christian, in Fort Worth, Texas. Midland Christian's playing them. And literally, we don't have our equipment grounded properly. So every once in a while, we reach over there and get electrocuted. You know, just for grins and giggles, you know. And
my first house here in Midland, the shower head and the master bath. I remember standing in it thinking, man, something feels tingly. And I reached up and it shocked me. And I was like, I'll never shower in that again. I sold the house. But yeah, no, I get it. And, you know, I appreciate you saying that. And there is a lot to it. It's a process once you get it figured out. Now, I can't see my computer. And normally I like to set it up where I can see it, but it just didn't work out this time. So the neuroticism in me is like, I know that bastard stopped about 2 minutes in, but it's probably just fine. But even if it did stop, this is as much for me as anyone else. And again, like I said, I've gotten to know you, obviously, and just tremendous amount of respect for you and the husband that you are, the father that you are, and the man that you are. And in a lot of ways, you've definitely influenced the man I hope to be, and it just means a lot to me to get to sit here with you after a long day at work, and you know you stayed and I, you know, all those things, and it's just I'm humbled to get to have the opportunity to spend time with you, and selfishly this is one of the reasons that I wanted to do this type of thing. Yeah. Is I get to hang out with guys being dudes.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So keep at it. Again, do it for the love of the reason that you're doing it. And listen, man, you're going to get to look back on these episodes and all these crazy stories. This is just part of your, like you say, dudes being dudes or guys being dudes, whatever you said.
Guys being dudes.
And I know that's the part about the officiating that you missed today is that camaraderie. And so it doesn't really matter if you're officiating sports or you're involved in a team sport or you're involved in a branch of the military or, you know, you're a firefighter, you're a police officer, you know, whatever it is that you are, and you have that camaraderie with your colleagues, business, it doesn't really matter. You know, you're going out, you're with the guys, you know, you're making memories and that sort of thing. You know, that's a lot of what life is all about. And so just continue to go out there and do that. Continue to be that guy for your employer, Wildcat. Continue to coach up your employees on being safe, getting home to the wife and the kids and the significant others and that sort of thing. Because obviously, you know, the oil field can be a very dangerous place. Sure. It's not amateur hour. There's a lot of really dangerous things that are out there. And so I know you take that responsibility really, really heavily, and I'm sure it produces fruit in the things that you are doing as a safety guy. So kudos to you for doing that, man.
Thanks so much, man. Well, this has been awesome. I love, like I said, you know, last time I was in Midland, I kind of sneak attacked you. I was going to come see you, and then you weren't here, or you were and didn't let me know. But I love you, man. Thanks so much for being a part of this and sharing your story.
Oh, for sure.
And if it impacts one person, it's worth the time, I think.
Yeah, no, this has been fun. These are the kind of things that, you know, you kind of look back years later and it's like, hey, man, we spent an hour, hour and a half, whatever, however long we've been sitting here. And we were just talking about good times and good memories. So I appreciate the opportunity.
Awesome, man. Well, I love you, Dal. And, man, just keep doing what you're doing.
All right, man. Thank you.
See you, bro.
Good to see you, bro.
Yeah, man.
All right, good job.